You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good night. Welcome on it all to Monday Football Monday here on the SB Nation NFL Show. A reminder that the SB Nation NFL Show is presented by DraftKings Fantasy Sports. Check out what DraftKings has to offer this season with code SBNFL because life's more fun when you're in on the action. DraftKings, the crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Age and eligibility restrictions apply. Void where prohibited. See DraftKings.com. For details, as noted, this is Monday Football Monday on the SB Nation NFL Show. Make sure you subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, Apple devices, Spotify, whatever. Thank you for tagging all of us in your Spotify Wrapped. You can also watch the show if that is more your thing on the SB Nation NFL YouTube channel because we are everywhere. We are like, I don't know what we are like at this point in time. I say we, the incredible Rachel Prevett is on the ones and twos as always. My name is RG Ochoa from Blogging the Voice. And with me, as always, the two best writers from SBNation.com. Ricky, James, they can all kick rocks because Mark Schofield and JP Acosta are here. Mark, you look ravishing this morning.
That's a surprise given the fact that I had to sit through a Charger. Actually, no, wait. It was a Dodgers Red Sox game that ended 6-0. I mean, that's what we saw. Mookie Betts coming back to Fenway, hit a grand slam, had a 2-run double in the 8th to put it away. What am I doing? This team is just unwatchable right now. Unwatchable.
Yeah, it's too bad that we can't fast forward to the Patriots game when we get to that point.
But from where I sit, we've done it. We've done that game. It's over. It's over. It's done. We can move on.
Oh, we haven't done it yet. Don't worry, Mark. We'll you know, the body is not cold yet. You know what I mean? We'll still get there and offer a thorough sort of autopsy in just a bit. JP, your favorite team plays tonight. Primetime. Everyone is going to have their eyes on Duval County. I believe this is the first game in Duval County that is primetime this year. Is that correct?
This is the first Monday night football game in Jacksonville since, I believe, 2000.
Wow, the MJD rookie year.
It's been a long time since Monday Night Football has been in Jacksonville. This is the biggest game of the year. This is the biggest stretch of the year. They beat the Bengals. JP, they are the one seed of the year.
Let's slow down.
This is listen. This team has performance anxiety at home. This is a primetime game against a team you should beat. Do not mess around. And the Jaguars mess around a lot. They screw around, and then you find out. And the next thing you know, Jake Browning is thrown for 300 yards on national television. And I'm sitting here on Twitter or Threads.
What was that game a couple of years ago? It was, I think, Bengals-Steelers on Monday night. And Ryan Finley was in the starting lineup for the Bengals, and he won.
Yeah.
I'm not saying. I'm just saying.
Look, don't bring that bad juju.
From a factual standpoint, the Jaguars, according to our friends at DraftKings Sportsbook, are 10-point favorites. So, JP, you can walk off the plank with this biggest game of the year statement here. I mean, you're double-digit point favorites. I mean,
this is because if they win, they are.
I'm not denying the significance of it, but like this is hardly a fight that's going to go 10 rounds. That's all we're saying, you know.
But this is a very important game in Jacksonville, like. It's not necessarily like the game itself. It's what it means. Like, you win this game, you're the one seed. This is the most important stretch of the season. If you can go undefeated against the rest of the AFC North, which is starting Joe Flacco at quarterback next week, you can be the number one seed in the AFC for the first time since 1999. I was born in 2000. I've never seen a Jaguars team as the one seed in the playoff. This is huge.
All right, well, JP, now that you have properly offended us with your take and with your, you know, reminder about your age, it's time to get to the point of this entire show. And that's to recap all of the Sunday action of Week 13, which doesn't include, obviously, Monday Night Football. We had six teams on bye. We also had a Thursday Night Football game where the Cowboys flew a little bit too close to the sun in terms of my particular preference, but ultimately wound up on top, and that's what matters the most. But we're not here to talk about them. We're here to talk about everything that happened on Sunday. Speaking of the Cowboys, I don't know that we can start anywhere else, Mark, except for San Francisco. I mean, Cowboys, Eagles, who cares? Because the 49ers run the NFC. Like, they have made that very, very well known with a 42-19 humiliation of the Eagles. Your thoughts on the game, and does it justify their talk about what could, would, maybe hypothetically would have happened in the title game had Brock Purdy not gotten
it? I mean, I don't know it justifies that. I think a lot of what we saw yesterday, you know, I think the Niners are a different team a little bit, particularly up front on defense. I do think the Chase Young acquisition for them has been huge. I mean, when you have a player like that and you can almost use him as like a rotational pass rusher, that's incredible for a defense. But this was a statement win. I mean, look, the 49ers look terrifying right now. I think that's a game where if you're Dallas, if you're Detroit, if you're Philadelphia, if you're one of these other teams, if you're the Atlanta Falcons, who are currently the number four seed, I mean, you're looking at this game, you're looking at what San Francisco did weeks ago against Dallas, and you're thinking, man, we get matched up against this team, whether it's at home or on the road, our work's cut out for us. Like, I don't think it's panic time in Philly. I saw that fire Brian Johnson is trending. I don't know if that was tongue-in-cheek. A lot of the tweets about it seem to be more tongue-in-cheek than anything else. But this was a statement win from the San Francisco 49ers. I don't think Brock Purdy had an attempt over 15 air yards. But the throws that he had made extremely well. And I know there's going to be a lot of talk about Purdy potentially getting himself into the MVP conversation, but this was a statement win. They're a terrifying team. Those three losses in the middle of the season seem light years away right now, and the rest of the NFC is on notice.
Just quickly, JP, Brock Purdy, according to our friends at DraftKings, is the favorite to win MVP as of Monday morning.
We're going to do this with Brock Purdy for the entire year, and I have already made my stance known on Brock Purdy, which is he has elevated the offense in ways that Jimmy G could not, because Brock Purdy is much more willing to play off script than Jimmy G was. He's more willing to do the stupid stuff than Jimmy G was. Like, Jimmy G did stupid stuff, but that was more just because he's Jimmy G. Brock Purdy did stupid stuff in like hopes of extending a play. He did the out-of-pocket creation. But what this game was more about was Kyle Shanahan figuring out the Eagles' biggest weakness at linebacker and just hammering that over and over and over. They would continue to do that little motion. I don't know what you call it, but Debo or Christian McCaffrey runs behind the quarterback and they kind of fake it to him and basically run play action off of that. They destroyed the Eagles' linebackers. That was the entire game. They went after the Eagles' middle of defense. They stopped running at the edges where they were setting hard edges. The Eagles setting hard edges the entire game. So they just ran up the middle at the linebackers. The Niners had a 46% success rate on all runs. Like, that's if you have a successful first round rate of almost 50% on all your runs in a game, you're probably going to win that game. So I see it less as like, oh, Brock Purdy really played his butt off, because his, I mean, like Mark said, like, his average depth of target was 5 yards. Like, he was kind of point and shoot. But when they did ask him to make the throws, like the third down throw to Ayuk before the first big Debo touchdown, it was a good throw. So I think this was more about Kyle Shanahan, like, being the best offensive designer and play caller in the NFL, and the Eagles having a major, major, major problem on defense.
Well, on the subject of the Eagles defense, Shaq Leonard expected to make his decision between the Eagles and the Cowboys on Monday. That hasn't happened at the time of this recording. Not that that solves anything, JP, but I mean, it is, you know, it is still a pending issue or a pending situation. So, I have to imagine every Eagles fan is hoping he picks them.
Yeah, if you put a Band-Aid over a cannon wound, like, then it'll help a little bit.
This was so much fun to watch, obviously from a Cowboys perspective, but also super terrifying to watch, to your point, Mark. Like, cool, great, like, the Eagles lost, but I mean, I know that the 49ers will ruin your life. I mean, that's been the Cowboys' life the last 2 years, and it is super terrifying that they have refound their form. Obviously, I agree with both of you on the Brock Purdy thing. He's an incredible point guard from a distribution standpoint, but like, he's not, you know, he's not the straw stirring this drink, and I don't know why we can't just all acknowledge that. you know, without giving him the MVP award. But I mean, there are some things he does that I would not be the most annoyed possible if Brock Purdy won MVP, I guess, relative to other potential outcomes. Although I don't know how you're not talking more about, not you, JP, but about Tyreek Hill, especially what he did after what he did on Sunday. We'll get there. The Niners are insane. Is there any chance that Seattle stands against them, Mark, this week in Santa Clara?
Oh, I don't think so. I mean, that's a tough ask for Seattle. I mean, the one thing from Philadelphia, this was what, third game in 12 days? Like, this was a tough little stretch just schedule-wise for them when you had Eagles, Bills, Niners. Like, that's
and
a tough
and they caught game. The Niners coming off that Seattle, that first Seattle game, which was on Thanksgiving night. And now they'll catch the Cowboys coming off of a normal Thursday night game as well.
I mean, so it's a tough schedule for Philadelphia. Yeah, for Seattle, though. I mean, look, as you mentioned at the outset, though, they threw a bit of a scare into Dallas. That offense can make some plays, but we saw this matchup just a couple of days ago, basically, and San Francisco handled business. So I don't know if Seattle's really got a shot, you know, coming into this week.
So quick thing on the Eagles. I think last week I wrote about why, like, the Eagles are winning close games. It doesn't matter because they're just a good team. I did write in that story a little bit of a problem that I found with the Eagles offense. It is very much screens, slants, and deep passes. Like, there is no in-between game. They haven't been able to find that. Shane Steichen was able to get Jalen Hurts to that point. Brian Johnson has not been able to do that for most of the season. Of course, Dallas Goedert being out kind of affects that. But against the 49ers team that basically you're going in with less than 100% Jalen Hurts, and you didn't have that QB run game pretty much at all. And looking at Ben Baldwin's side from The Athletic, it looks like Jalen Hurts had three running plays. Like, if you don't have that added threat to the Eagles offense, in addition to not having that kind of in-between game, it makes it really hard to win. You could tell in that game, Jalen Hurts was just drifting back and back and back in the pocket because there was nothing open, because there's no mid-range to this game. To this offense right now. It is very much Houston Rockets, James Harden era, where it's all layups and three-pointers. But you need to be able to find that, especially if you cannot run the ball with Hurts being
to your point, JP, hurt. He even had the little slip-up on third down when he was drifting back forever and ever and ever and ever. And they talked about in the broadcast how he's not afraid to hold on to the ball. Sometimes holding on to the ball can lead to terrible and weird and wonky things. I guess we would not be a proper football podcast if we didn't talk about the security officer Dom, Mark. This was objectively funny. Like I don't know that, and, you know, anybody who didn't have skin in the game, I think, chuckled and thought it was hilarious. But it was also kind of infuriating. I mean, like, what is Dom doing on the side? I know I'm not asking questions that none of us haven't seen all over social media at this point, but why is Dom allowed to be there? Why can't anybody just hire their own version of Dom to instigate and incite players in situations like
this? I think my favorite part of this entire sequence was the fact that, like, I don't know, maybe a quarter before it happened, Greg Olsen was talking about how, look, we went to this great dinner the other night, this guy Dom, who's been with the Eagles forever, he's the guy that hooked us up. And then he's down there on the sideline looking like one of Tony Soprano's boys, like throwing hands, basically. Like, it's just an incredible sequence that was set up by the fact that he picked the dinner spot for the Fox crew.
They got the damn Sopranos down there on the Eagles sideline. I knew, like, Nick Sirianni got hired. And then, like, immediately, of course, Dom was there before, but he hired 35,000 of the most big, aggressive Italian men in the city of Philadelphia to be his, like, little, to be like his little entourage on the sideline. And I just think that's great. People have already started to make shirts of Dom. They're already, like, I've already said he's never having to pay for a beer or a cold cut in the city of Philadelphia ever again.
I think the other thing that I loved was there were takes last night and this morning. Maybe tongue in cheek, I don't know, but people ripping Hurts for not standing up and doing it for Dom. And I'm just like, this is fantastic. This is great. Yeah, do it for Dom.
To the folklore of it all, had the Eagles won, the Dom stuff would be everywhere. Oh, like, everywhere. It's, you know what I mean? Like, it's Dom still a little loud, everywhere. But despite them getting, like, you know, destroyed. But, like, had they won, it would have been something ridiculous. You mentioned, or you used the word entourage. There was a character in Entourage named Dom. This was just... And as somebody who obviously is rooting against the Eagles, I was so worried that this felt, Mark, like the weird thing that goes Philly's way. Like it just, you could kind of smell it, yeah, and feel it. And I was pre-annoyed. I was like, oh, and of course, like the most physical player on the 49ers is who catches the stray. I mean, maybe it's not a stray, but from all of this, like, but thankfully, Mark, Kyle Shanahan stood tall. Although Kyle Shanahan was pretty reasonable about this at the end. He was just bothered, but, you know, not passionate.
Yeah, I mean, look, it did feel that way, though, RJ. Like, right in the moment, you feel like, oh, but this is going to be – they were even saying it on the broadcast, too. They were like, this is going to be the spark. This is going to be the spark. You know, Philly seemed like they were sleepwalking. This is going to be the thing that, like, sort of lit it up.
It's been a weird year for Italians in the NFC East. You got Tommy DeVito kind of, like, leading the Giants to Caleb Williams or Drake May, possibly. And then you got Big Dom kind of setting off fireworks. Drake Greenlaw should have met Dom in the parking lot. Meet him in Temecula. Dude, let's keep this thing popping.
Yeah, I actually saw that it was yesterday, the day that this entire sequence happened. This will go over your head, JP. But it was 14 years ago on Sunday that Jersey Shore initially premiered. So just kind of a full, you know, like universal alignment of you know, Italians in the you know, Jersey-ish kind of area of the country. Okay, we don't normally go to Sunday Night Football this early, but Mark, I think we have to because Jordan Love stood tall. And I think there is now, if there wasn't before, legitimate concern about the Chiefs and their pass catcher situation. This was a interesting but kind of gross, but sort of grossly beautiful game. Also, always nice to see Lambeau Field in the cold at night. Mark, your takeaways from Sunday Night Football.
Have the Packers done it again? I mean, is that the main takeaway here? Because I feel like that's the sentiment sort of brewing right now. You go from Favre to Rodgers, and now all of a sudden Jordan Love seems like he might have a little something here. He played extremely well in this game. I love some of the throws he made, some of the layered throws he made. That one to Wick sort of earlier in the game with a crosser working right to left. That young receiving corps sort of figured it out, and it certainly was an incredible contrast between that group and what we're seeing in Kansas City, to your point. I saw Mitchell Schwartz just, you know, in the past like 40 minutes or so put together this long thread on X. Was basically like, we all have to calm down. Like, the defense is better in Kansas City. Like, yeah, the pass catchers, they're not winning on the outside, but we still have Patrick Mahomes. And he's right. Look, this is still a team that's right in the mix of the playoff hunt. But it just feels like it's off in Kansas City. And yes, their defense has improved, but it feels like the offense has taken such a step back that it hasn't quite sort of evened out for them to the point where they could win games like this.
It feels like, yeah, you can say they have Patrick Mahomes, and that's fine, but the margins in the AFC are a lot thinner than they were in previous years. Like, now, because you lost, you are the four seed right now. You would have to go on the road, and that's something that Patrick Mahomes just hasn't done. With as impressive as Patrick Mahomes has been, they haven't had to go on the road in the divisional round yet. They haven't had to play a road game. So that's something, you know, like, it's something worth noting. But I think the priority or the main thing we should be talking about with this game is Jordan. Like Mark said, the Packers might have done it again. Maybe Brian Gutekunst was right. Like, Jordan Love looks good. And it's not just like, oh, he's put together like one good game or two good games against the Lions. Like, since week 9, he's put together some really impressive stretches of play. At the beginning of the season, there are some inefficiencies, some inaccuracies, but you saw the aggressiveness throwing the ball downfield. He is very much a trick shot artist. He's going to try and throw the toughest throws on the field. But now you're starting to see the inefficiencies go away. The young receivers are starting to grow up a little bit. Like, this is – they're playing with house money at this point. So, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see where this Packers team goes, because right now you're right on the fringe of the playoff hunt. You know, you can still make that playoff run if you wanted to, but this team is going to be fun for the next few years. And I know Bears fans have got to be sick because they got a quarterback again before y'all got a quarterback ever.
Yeah, I saw a post on the Bears subreddit that was like, they're having the year we thought we would, like the kind of cute little contender, maybe fringe playoff team, to your point. Like, it's just, again, it's funny. I mean, if you're not involved, obviously, but they are the 7 seed currently in the NFC playoff picture, and the Packers have a very friendly down the stretch schedule. So all logic and reason suggests that they will be a playoff team, obviously, in about a month and a half. I do think, again, I mentioned the sort of universal alignment that happened with the Jersey Shore thing. That kind of happened in this game. Obviously, Jordan Love made his first start against the Chiefs, 3 years ago. Do either of you remember why?
Aaron Rodgers got COVID, didn't he?
That was the Aaron Rodgers COVID game, right? And that was the, like, I want to say the beginning of the end for Aaron Rodgers, but that was the true inflection point for a lot of people's public opinion on Aaron Rodgers, obviously. And Sunday was kind of a rough day for Aaron Rodgers. Nobody's happy that Aaron Rodgers got hurt, but there were all the reports. I think Ian Rapoport called it unprecedented.
It was described as a triumphant week will be able to for be active. Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, exactly. The TLDR on that is Aaron Rodgers will seemingly wear a uniform for the Jets, but only to just stand there. That was kind of basically what all the insiders said. And again, that's a heroic kind of journey that Aaron has been on. Again, it really ever since the game that Jordan Love had to start for him against the Chiefs of all teams. So it's kind of funny to me that that happened, the Aaron Rodgers thing that morning, and everybody saw right through it. Like nobody, if you check all the replies, nobody was like, oh, what a badass. Like everybody's like, this is all he wanted, was just to be in the news and have all the attention. And that later that night in primetime at Lambeau Field, Jordan Love relit the flame of Packers fans with his best moment ever.
Very
as a professional.
Cool.
That's pretty cool, look, Mark.
Love faced a lot of questions. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, I do a show, radio spot every Wednesday in Green Bay. And a couple of weeks ago, the question was, are they going to be drafting a quarterback? Like that was where the discussion was with Jordan Love. And now it's, is this kid bringing them to the playoffs? And is he next? Is he the third in the heir apparent to the Packers quarterback sort of situation here? And what we saw Sunday night makes it look like he absolutely is. It's an incredible sort of turnaround. And of course, there was the juxtaposition of when he made his first start and where his mom had to sit in the absolute upper rim of Arrowhead. And now she's in the suite at Lambeau. Like, right. That's a nice little sort of like juxtaposition as well.
We got a little,
JP,
we got a little bit JP. Of a log jam for coach of the year. You got D'Amico Ryan, Shane Steichen. I would add Matt LaFleur to that conversation, especially getting that team from where they were to possibly being in the playoffs. They're the youngest team in the NFL. And I think that is worth mentioning in terms of like a feather in Matt LaFleur's cap, because he has schemed the heck out of this offense. It is beautiful to watch right now.
I'm fine with that. I do think that most people think the sexy pick is D'Amico Ryans, although Dan Campbell obviously has a lot of fans in that race. Shane Steichen is the pick for me. Like, the Colts were a mess. I mean, and they lost Anthony Richardson. Like, I feel like he's made more lemonade with the lemons he had in particular. On the subject of food, though, JP, I'm not suggesting that we put the Chiefs in the crock pot, but I do think that the Chiefs are in a crock pot relative to who they are. So like it's a vastly superior crock pot compared to the rest of the NFL. But like, this is like, I don't mean to keep bagging on the Eagles, but like everybody was saying like all season long before Sunday, right? Like, oh, maybe the Eagles are going to catch on. Maybe they're going to catch on. It's like, well, maybe this is just who they are. Like, maybe the Chiefs aren't going to figure this out on offense like before the end of the season. Maybe this is just who they are. But like, their offense is stuck right now, JP, and it might not get out of this rut. So again, maybe they're in like it's like a diamond layered crock pot is kind of my point.
That's probably the better move. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe like a smoker, like a pellet grill. Like, I'm totally with you. Like, something along those lines. It's a more luxurious place to be, but they're on a slow cook.
On a slow cook, but in the end, it still might taste pretty great. Like, it still might be pretty good, but
I'm not saying the playoffs or anything, but this is a very different type of struggle for them that we've seen in the Patrick Mahomes.
It's a very different receiver group. And I think the biggest thing that I've been kind of preaching for Chiefs fans and for the Chiefs in general is just patience with this receiver group. Like, they're still trying to figure out who they have and what they can do to kind of operate in the in-between game. They have two guys who run fast this way in Marquez Valdes-Scantling and Justin Watson, and then three guys who run fast on screenplays and jet sweeps in Mecole Hardman, Sky Moore, and Kadarius Toney. They have a lot of redundant skill sets there. They need to start using Rashee Rice on downfield targets. You cannot continue to lump Rashee Rice into the screen yak, like jet sweep area, because you have three guys like that already. They just need more variety with that skill position group. And I think it's becoming a bit more of a problem because Travis Kelce is getting older. It's not that Travis Kelce is worse. It's just he's an older player now. He doesn't win with speed or burst like he used to. It's more savvy and like using the small, finer portions of route running. You can't really, he needs help. It is very much like a, like, you know how they do in the NBA, how much help does this person need, or how much help does yada yada need? How much help does Travis Kelce need? Like, he needs a little bit of help at this point. Like, you need somebody to be that in-between game guy. And that's what Rashee Rice can do if you let him run routes downfield.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mark, let's move to the aforementioned D'Amico Ryans, who probably made his biggest coach of the year case on Sunday, because it wasn't C.J. Stroud lighting it up for the Texans, but they managed to pull it away from the Broncos. A significant win for the Texans and a significant loss for the Broncos relative to the AFC playoff picture. 22-17, the final score. This game ended with a Jimmy Ward interception of Russell Wilson in the end zone. Russ, kind of quietly, you know, hushing all of the memes and jokes that we've all had a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think two big takeaways for this from Houston's perspective. One, Will Anderson Jr. is legit. Like, we were talking about it yesterday during that game. It seems like he is consistently making plays. And what I really loved about it was there were a lot of times where he was just winning one-on-ones. And that was like one of the simmering questions about him was, okay, what's it going to look like when he doesn't have Nick Saban sort of scheming up, you know, blitz games and pressure schemes and stuff like that for him up front? And he just has to win one-on-one. What's his toolkit as a pass rusher look like? Well, it looks like a pretty good bull rush to me when he's like, you know, forklifting people right into Russell Wilson's lap. So that is a huge part of it. The Tank Dell injury though, like where did they go offensively from there? Like, I think I saw that like John Metchie had like 12 routes in this game. Like, do they lean into more 12 personnel? Like, where are they going to make up the difference between, because the chemistry that Dell and Stroud had has been such a big start to their season, has been such an explosive element in their offense. And they still have playmakers. I mean, they busted out the Bijan cam just now for the Stroud to Nico Collins play. And if we haven't written about it yet, that's the first thing I'm writing when we get done here. But where do they go offensively for, you know, consistent explosive playmaking with Dell sidelined for the rest of the season?
I think this game was very much more of a proof of concept game for the Texans, and not a proof of concept of what they're doing schematically, but a proof of concept for how they've built this team. Like you said, Will Anderson Jr. had two sacks. There's been a lot of hand-wringing about him getting sacks, with not noticing that he is top 10 in the league overall in pressures. And then Derek Stingley Jr. with two interceptions. I believe he has four interceptions over three games. He has been extremely productive now that he's healthy. Jimmy Ward making big plays. C.J. Stroud, once again, being very good. This is the proof of concept for this Texans team. This is the, oh, we have franchise cornerstones. We're building something really special here type of game. Will Anderson Jr. was unblockable today. I think a lot of the pre-draft stuff about, oh, he played 4-eye. He doesn't really have a bag as a pass rusher. I see that a lot. It's like, when NBA like fans say this player has no bag, even though they score 30 points a game, like, okay, and like, cool, doesn't have a bag, but still scoring 30 points. Will Anderson Jr. does not have a highly developed pass rush like tool set yet, but he also is getting multiple sacks and pressures a game. You can win with that. John Grenard playing fantastic football now that he's got another pass rusher next to him. This team's going to be good for years to come. I'm very sad about the Tank Dell injury, but this team's going to be good for a long time. Denver, you know, like, Russ screwed it up. Like, this was a Russ screw-up game. He threw three interceptions. I think he had some good moments. I think the biggest thing that we're losing with Russ is Sean Payton has helped Russ so much in just being like, okay, we need you to make a couple throws a game. The Cortland Sutton touchdown, beautiful. That was one of those throws. Getting them set up like on third downs, like that is what they need. They need him to be Russell Wilson on third downs and in the red zone. He was not good today in those areas. Like, that's just, this was a Russ screw-up game. And now you kind of put yourself behind the eight ball when it comes to the playoff picture. So it's going to be uphill for them, but, you know, the Texans are really good, and they're going to be good for the next few years.
They are fun, and it feels like they could steal a playoff win or something, kind of, you know, be road underdogs this year and maybe pull it off. But they do have a lower ceiling, obviously, relative to the AFC's elite at this point in time. But they're certainly experiencing, I think, significant returns on investment on all their kind of future cornerstone players. We didn't even mention Derek Stingley Jr. Nice having two interceptions. Like, it's just cool. It's cool to see, like, all these things working out for Houston, a team that was really lost in the wilderness. There's no question that they have emerged far victorious on the other side of the Deshaun Watson situation and trade. So again, I think it's just really cool vibes to see them doing well. The Broncos thing is so strange. Like, I'm still not accustomed to seeing Sean Payton, like, him and Russell Wilson together in Denver. It feels a lot like the Ninja Turtles Power Rangers meme to me. It's awkward and it's strange, but before it was clunky and we could laugh at it, Mark. Like, now they're somewhat respectable. And so I don't know how to feel about it. That's why, like, I'm kind of impressed, but I don't know if I should be impressed. Now their playoff odds dip significantly, so maybe I don't have to worry about it. I have just questions about, like, the Houston future feels so incredibly high, but, like, I don't know what the short or long-term future of the Broncos is.
Yeah, it's a strange situation. I mean, they're pretty much tied to Russell because of that contract for at least a little longer. So this is what we're going to have to get familiar with. I mean, it's still strange now. I agree with you. It's not as strange as seeing Joe Flacco in a Browns uniform, but it's still odd. But they're going to have to sort of make it work. Now, I think the bigger story for them has been their turnaround on the defensive side of the ball. And they said it early in the broadcast. They were like, look, you know, yeah, the defense is getting better, but they're still going to have that 70 burger that Miami hunt on them to, like, on their resume for the rest of the season. But the defense has gotten better. I mean, I think this is an organization that won a Super Bowl with Peyton Manning at the end of his career when he was dealing with a neck nerve injury. He couldn't really throw the ball, and they relied on their defense. Is there a similar path for them down the road as we get, you know, as Russell Wilson continues his career and as that starts to wind down? Maybe, but they're going to need to continue to improve on the defensive side of the ball if they're going to be able to pull that off.
JP, Mark mentioned Joe Flacco in a Browns uniform, so I guess we have to go there next. The Rams, you know, put it away a little bit at the end. The box score, I don't think, is as reflective of the game that this truly was. 36-19, the final score. Joe Flacco kind of cooked. I mean, like, Joe Flacco could have totally helped the New York Jets this season. Like, it was kind of weird and kind of awesome to see Joe Flacco play moderately well for Cleveland.
This was such a weird game. I think mainly because, like, it was the Rams, who might not be good, but also might be in the playoffs. The Browns, who also might not be good, but might be in the playoffs. They also had, this was the One Piece game, based on the anime One Piece. So it was really cool. They handed out these really cool, like, towels with, like, One Piece, and it had the logo from One Piece. It had the Rams helmet on it, which I thought was really dope. And so I was just basically making One Piece references the entire game. Puka Nacua rocks. Like, yeah. That dude's awesome. He came back from injury, caught four passes, 139 yards, and a touchdown. Like, he is the perfect Sean McVay complement to Cooper Kupp. And could potentially be, like, if Cooper Kupp decides, like, in the future, he could be that next Cooper Kupp. You know, they do somewhat similar things. And I just am so impressed with how this Rams offense has kind of morphed itself and built itself out of what we think normally associate with a Sean McVay, like outside zone, boot action team. They're more like duo. They're running at you. They're doing a lot more from the pocket. Matt Stafford is still, he still has a few throws a game where it's like, oh, he's still got the arm on him. They're a really well-built offense with players who can impact games. So I don't know how far that takes you in the playoffs, but it'll work for the Rams. It has worked for the Rams, you know? So I'm just really impressed with how the Rams have kind of built this offense out of, you know, what we thought was Cooper Kupp, Matt Stafford, and a bunch of
stuff. Yeah, Puka's a lot of fun. And the thing that's critical from him in this offense, to JP's point, is what he does as a blocker too. Like you watch them at the end of the game situation where they're just trying to run clock and run Williams. You know, they're using Puka in the wing on those insert blocks where you're coming under the tight end and working up to the second level to take on a linebacker. And he's handling that. And oh, he's also giving you like 69-yard like catch and run touchdowns. Stafford is still cooking. I mean, the long catch and run touchdown to Puka, look, they tried to disguise that. They were showing man. They were showing zero. They run invert two. Stafford reads it. Perfect read, perfect throw, great ball. I had a number of good throws in that game. And look, I know that, you know, playoff pitchers and stuff are what they are, given where we are in the season. But right now, Rams are on the cusp. You know, before that late night game, they were in the seventh slot, which would have given them San Francisco in week one. And I mean, in the wild card weekend. And, you know, that's a matchup that's got some history that's kind of on the Rams side. I mean, I don't want to say that, look, you know, this version of the Rams could easily beat the Niners, but that would be an intriguing wild card matchup to me.
We could have, I think, two potential division rivalries in, you know, ironically, in wild card weekend, because Seattle's right there as well. If San Francisco does stay put at the 2 seed, it looks like Detroit will be the 3 seed, and if Minnesota hangs on for the 6 seed, we could get the NFC North and NFC West matchups. It's interesting you mentioned Cooper Kupp, JP. Turf Show Times, our Rams blog, had an article on Monday morning talking about how it might be time for the Cooper Kupp era in LA to be over. If they moved on, like, how fast is Kansas City like running to sign Cooper Kupp in free agency? Like,
instantly.
Yeah. So
they won't even get the thank you Cooper Kupp message out on social media before he's in Chiefs red.
It's Cooper Kupp or Mike Evans that are going to be on the Chiefs next year. Like, that is a certainty at this point. Maybe both, to your kind of oh god point. Kyren Williams is also awesome. Like, I'm very intrigued about the future of the Rams and who's playing quarterback for them, and if Sean McVay is still hanging around. Obviously, we all know the rumors, but the Cleveland side of things, like the Joe Flacco stuff, was fun. I don't know, like, it would not shock me if they fall all the way out of the playoff race. Mark, I tweeted out odds for respective awards on Monday morning. And Micah Parsons on Friday last week overtook Myles Garrett in the Defensive Player of the Year race. As of Monday morning, though, he has a significant gap between him and Garrett. Micah is at plus 125 and Garrett is at plus 225. We can all sit here and bemoan like the process of awards in the NFL, but the reality is, to win something like Defensive Player of the Year, you got to be on a winning team. And to me, Mark, that suggests that odds makers believe Cleveland is fading fast.
Yeah, it seems that way. And I mean, look, the case for Garrett, and we made it, was like, look, they're going to keep winning games 13-10, right, 13-7 on the backs of their defense. The Rams just hung 36 on you. Like, that kind of weakens the case a little bit. And he's still, look, one of the most impactful defensive players. But, you know, when you can have this kind of production against a Cleveland defense that was supposed to be the thing that was going to carry you into the playoffs and bolster your candidacy, those odds are certainly going to take a hit.
You're starting to see the attrition as well on the defense. Myles Garrett has been dealing with a shoulder injury. Denzel Ward did not play. It just really sucks because Kevin Stefanski has done literally all he can do with that offense in terms of scheming people open, scheming things up. But you're only as good as what you put on the field, like who you have on the field. And they got Joe Flacco playing quarterback in 2023. Like, it was cool like the first 10 minutes. Yeah. But then you realize, like, oh, this is Joe Flacco we're talking about. Like, in 2023, he hasn't been playing for a minute. It's tough because you really hope, like, Kevin Stefanski can, like,
do something good with this roster because the scheme is really good, but they just don't have the players.
So I feel like most NFL shows kind of go through the games like best to worst, like in terms of like vibes. We got to save some of these good ones for the end, because if not, we'll just be like complaining. So you got to get through some rough ones. Although remember, you do each have a fast forward option should you choose to use it. Mark, the Atlanta Falcons.
I'm using my fast forward.
Okay.
Nope.
13-8 was the final score, just so we're clear. The fact that there was serious doubt or legitimate doubt about whether or not Atlanta would win this game makes me very excited about the Cowboys potentially drawing them in the wild card round. But I digress. Okay, Mark, you have your fast forward. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers survived at home against the Carolina Panthers, 21-18. Okay.
Yeah, get rid of this one.
Yeah. There was no...
fast forward like three fourths of the NFC,
just all the NFC South games.
Like post head coach firing bump in this game. Although we talked about this on Friday. Generally, like the Josh McDaniels example is a great one. Like generally the bump comes because like everybody hated the head coach. I don't know that everybody like hated Frank Reich. Like he seems like, you know, a nice person. It's just a really untenable situation. Mark, we cannot fast forward to this one. The Los Angeles Chargers won 6-0 in Foxborough. Your thoughts?
This morning, two of my favorite friends in this business, Mr. JP Acosta and Mr. Trevor Sikkema.
Okay. Both I thought it was going to be like a Monday Football Monday setup with me. Okay, cool. Not for Trevor, though. Trevor's great. I'm a big fan of Trevor.
They both dropped mock drafts, and in both, they gave Drake May to the New England Patriots. And I am very much looking forward to that day because. Having to watch this Bailey Zappi-led offense, like, missing – I know the conditions were miserable, and that's fine, but you're missing throws, you're slow on reads, you can't get anything done, and every time the defense comes up and gets a stop, you think, well, maybe this will be the drive that they sort of figure it out, and it doesn't happen. Like, I just can't do it anymore. I just can't watch it anymore. And, like – from the Chargers' perspective, like this was a game, and I'm just going to tee JP up for this because he said it yesterday, and it's the perfect line, and I'm going to let him land the plane here because this is the best way to describe what we saw yesterday.
The Chargers tried the charger, but the Patriots chargered harder. Like, that's the ultimate, like, gist of this game. Like, what do the Chargers do? Like, what are you getting excited for with the Chargers? The defense played great, of course. You hold a team to 0 points. You know, like, you should feel good about that. Khalil Mack has looked amazing. But the offense has kind of fallen off a cliff. And it's really, really, really bad when, you know, like, we keep doing this with the Chargers. And every time we just fall for the play action. We fall for the Chargers play action.
I'm not doing it next year.
I can't do it anymore.
Like, when we get to the summer, we're talking about teams, and if I bring up the Chargers in any way positive, somebody just fast forward me.
So I think the Chargers are the bigger story here, Mark. All due respect. I mean, nothing new changed. Like, the status quo remained with the Patriots. Like, they're really bad. They didn't, you know, whatever. But yeah, this was the bigger indictment, I think, was on the Chargers, MTL's point. I don't know if either of you saw this during the noon games. Mitchell Schwartz tweeted this out. I love the tweet, which is, I want to read it verbatim. He said, "We're going to have some crazy revisionist history lookbacks on Kellen Moore and Mike McCarthy after the season." Obviously, you both know why I love this. It should be happening already, but man, what an unbelievable turn of events. Moore the pumpkin and McCarthy the hero is not what anyone expected. Now, I'm not steering us in this direction for either of you to like advocate for Mike McCarthy as a hero, but if you want to, I'm totally here for that. JP, you have your hand raised, which is really polite. I don't want to sit here and pretend like I thought Kellen Moore stunk. Like, that was not how I felt. I was moderately upset that the Cowboys moved on from him. I felt like they just needed a change of scenery. And obviously that decision has aged very well. But, like, holy crap, JP. Like, this is, like, you know, this is more than bad. Like, this is dysfunctional at this point.
I said before the season, what is Kellen Moore actually bringing to the Chargers offense? It's a lot of 6-yard stop routes, which looks a lot like what was going on in Dallas. I mean, the run game has looked more efficient early, but they can't run the ball now. Austin Eckler has not been great recently.
Horrible contract year for Austin Eckler.
Yeah, really rough.
Like horrible for, and I don't mean this in like a mean-spirited way, but like Austin Eckler, respectably, is somebody who's like, running backs do matter, like pay our position. Like he has, you know, tried to lead the position, which again, I really respect and admire, but like really horrible production, you know, to match up with that mantra. It's just an unfortunate series of events.
Yeah, and it's just really bad right now for the Chargers that we're going to keep doing this with Quentin Johnston. And he had 5 catches for 57 yards, which is good. But the drop, man, like that's really rough. And we're going to keep doing this. We're going to do this all the time because they drafted him 1 spot before Zay Flowers and 2 spots before Jordan Addison. It's, yeah. Like
he's the new Jalen Reagor in a class with, you know, Justin Jefferson, Lamb, yeah. Right? Like it's just tough scene.
It's really tough because, you know, this was supposed to be like the year for the Chargers to make that run, to finally, like, you know, kind of challenge the Chiefs, a weak Chiefs team. Like we've acknowledged, like this is a weaker Chiefs team than we've seen. And they're not even second in the division. Like this is a bottoming out of like really bad proportions for this team.
That's such a great point from JP. Like, it's been so annoying for the Chargers, right? Like, that the Chiefs just survive. Like, no matter what, every year, like, they managed to thrive and do it again. Like, this was the year. Like, you had the chance. Like, they're down on their luck. Like, you could have won the AFC West. But I think, like, we, in a very strange way, maybe believe more in the unknown future of the Broncos than we do the Chargers right now. And it has nothing to do with the quarterbacks, but, like, they're that dysfunctional.
Yeah, I mean, because you know there's going to be a coaching change. I mean, we assume that there's going to be a coaching change, so you don't know which direction they're going to go in there. Like, we've thought, you know, JP's called them Littlefinger, that you're going to get the Kellen Moore promotion, or, you know, maybe we get a Lincoln Riley, you know, move across town, something like that. But there's going to be something strange that happens there. But you've at least got Sean Payton. It looks like he's not going to go anywhere, and he at least has that team sort of moving in the right direction. The trend line seems to be better in Denver, even with Sunday's loss. And, yeah, again, to the earlier point, when we start talking about the Chargers this summer, Rachel, please just hit the fast forward button to remind us that there's no point in doing so.
I know that hindsight is 2020, but JP, if you're a Chargers fan, do you not feel like, you know, do you not wish, and we never want people to lose their jobs, but do you not wish that Brandon Staley had been fired after the playoff loss and that you had been the team that traded for Sean Payton? Like, again, I'm not saying Sean Payton has to be like, you would feel amazing, but I think you would definitely feel, you'd be on much sturdier ground, right? You'd be earlier into the path forward.
You feel a little bit better, but I also think this Chargers team might also not be as good talent-wise as we thought, because they're very top-heavy roster. Like, you know, you got Justin Herbert, you got Keenan Allen, Joey Bosa, Khalil Mack, Derwin James. Those are all stars, but there are 11 guys on the field. Like, you need more dudes, and that defensive secondary is not good right now. Like, you know, they had to get rid of J.C. Jackson. Asante Samuel Jr. has kind of been in and out the lineup. They need talent. Like, they need a massive influx of talent in that defensive backfield.
Mark, the Detroit Lions flirted with disaster, but ultimately survived in the Superdome, a building that Dan Campbell knows very well. 33-28, the final score. A nice bounce back game for the Lions, given the outing we last saw from them on Thanksgiving Day, which looks a little bit less embarrassing now, especially given what the Packers did on Sunday Night Football. So kind of a solid day overall for the Lions. They're keeping pace in the NFC and still have a low chance, a chance nonetheless at the one seed.
Yeah, they're keeping pace. Here's the thing, though, and we've touched on this in previous weeks. Since they gave up just 6 points to the Buccaneers back at the middle of October, the Ravens hunt 38 on them. Raiders, okay, 14 points. Chargers put 38 on them. Bears put 26 on them. You know, Packers obviously last week with 29. And then this Saints team that had Jameis Winston come into the game just put 28 on them. Like, their defense has gone from, hey, should we be putting this defense into the crock pot, to, okay, like, it's under the broiler now. Like, this defense has some problems. And yes, the schedule is what it is, but you do get the Dallas Cowboys in your second to last game. And if you start thinking about teams that they might see in the playoffs, like, yes, as it stands right now, they might see Minnesota, but then, you know, potentially San Francisco, or if they get to an NFC championship game, teams like Dallas or Philadelphia. This defense now, the offense, it's great that they're scoring points. The creativity, it's off the charts. Jared Goff, when things are going well, is playing extremely well. This defense is worrying me.
This game was transported directly out of 2015.
Jimmy Graham caught a touchdown. Bruce Irvin sacked Derek Carr. Like, what is happening here? I think the biggest thing that I took away from this game for the Lions is it is, again, a proof of concept for your draft process. Jack Campbell, finally playing Mike, led the team in tackles. Brian Branch, once again, phenomenal. Jahmyr Gibbs, 8 carries for 60 yards. This is why you draft all those guys. This is
Sam
why
Laporta,
they,
who you didn't. I mean,
Sam like Laporta, oh, yeah. Laporta, 9 catches, 140 yards. This is why you draft those guys early. I think we can. I think most of the NFL draft media kind of like hee-heed at the Lions drafting a running back and a linebacker in the first round, but those guys have been pretty good. Like, those guys have been core pieces to a team that is right now one of the top 3-4 seeds in the NFC. So they're kind of – that was a proof of concept game. For the Saints, when is it – I know he got hurt, but even before then, when is it time to go to Jameis? Like, when is it time to move on from Derek Carr? I think they have pushed their salary cap hell to their biggest limit. They cannot go any further than this because the talent is not good anymore. Michael Thomas is going to be a free agent. He has not really – when he's in the lineup, he hasn't been impactful, but that's when he's in the lineup. He hasn't always been in the lineup. Derek Carr has not been anywhere close to what you hoped he would be when you traded for him or when you signed him to that big money contract. The left tackle problem is huge. You let Teron Armstead walk and you drafted Trevor Penning, who isn't even starting at this point. It's just really, really bad misses over and over. Like, it's repeated misses. And for a team that is consistently pushing their salary cap problems back another year, you can't afford to have those misses. Chris Olave is awesome. I just wish he had a real quarterback throwing him the ball. So that's where we're at with the Saints. Like, we can say, like, oh, yeah, they're in the NFC South. Anything can happen. But that's
I'm done with that. Yeah. I'm done with that. Done. I wrote in my notes, like, look, it's crockpot time for them at the bare minimum. I don't care that they're in the NFC South. Like, this just is not working.
Yeah. Again, relative to context, this is like the second crockpot. Like, everybody has, like, 2 crockpots, and you have, like, the better one, and it's, like, where, like, the main dish is being cooked or whatever. This is, like, oh, okay, we need to make the queso. You know what I mean? Like, well, you know, like, let's get the like, more beat-up crockpot. Like,
the little mini.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, like, yeah. That's what we're putting the Saints right now. Like, I'm with you, Mark. Like, even at 5-7, even a game and a half back of the Falcons, like, I'm, like, no. Like, I don't know what I identify to be as, like, my biggest annoyance with them. But, like, everything is so, like, nothing works. Nothing gets me excited.
I mean, I think from where I sit, my biggest annoyance is when we looked at this division at the start of the year, even though we all identified it as, like, the most chaotic, it was like, well, at least they've got perhaps the most stable quarterback situation in this division, because you've got, you know, a rookie in Carolina. Right. You've got – we don't know what in Desmond Ridder in Atlanta. You've got the much ballyhooed Baker Mayfield versus Kyle Trask battle down in Tampa Bay. This is Derek Carr. Like, he is what he is. Maybe he's not an elite quarterback, but he's at least some stability. That hasn't materialized. And that's where my frustration lies, is because the crux of all the takes has just fallen to pieces in front of us.
That being said, they were down 21-0, and they only lost 33-28, which, again, though, is a bigger indictment of the Lions. Like, couldn't you just see, like, we mentioned the Lions would draw the Vikings right now if the playoffs started today. Like, could either of you see the Lions being up, like, 17-3 and losing that game, JP? Maybe not the Vikings, but you get the point. Like, you get the general point of, like, the statement.
It would be the most Detroit Lions thing ever, to get the highest seed that you have had since, like, in a long time, only to lose to one of your NFC North teams, especially if it were the Packers and Jordan Love. If they were to lose that game again in the playoffs, that is like they would be cursed. There's nothing else. And then a quick thing on, like, the Derek Carr stability, like, if you want to measure by EPA per play, which I think has kind of a little bit of noise when it comes to individual stats, Baker Mayfield has been a better quarterback than Derek Carr.
Yeah.
That's really bad. Like, and
yeah.
All right. Thankfully, we're done talking about the Saints. I have a fast forward left. So I think I'm going to use it to fast forward us through the Cardinals Steelers game, if you're both okay with that.
Not even Mother Nature wanted that game.
Yeah.
Mother Nature's like, look, we're gonna bring a thunderstorm and lightning to Pittsburgh in December to get rid of this game.
Hey, Mark, but are you super pumped for Thursday Night Football with the Steelers and Patriots this week?
I pushed this on Threads last night. Like, the odds of me playing Starfield are like off. It's like off the boards. I'm not going to be watching. Please, I'm a Patriots fan.
Please find something
seriously better to go read a book. Go outside. Spend time with your family. Go holiday shopping. Family.
Read a book.
Anything else than watch Bailey or Will Greer, Malik Cunningham versus Mitchell Trubisky. Like, do anything else.
I just tweeted this out like right before we got to this game. It's a tweet from Richard Deitch. That Amazon announced last week's Thursday night game between the Cowboys and Seahawks, which was also a great game, like on top of, you know, having the Cowboys, averaged 15.26 million viewers, the most watched game ever on Prime Video, which is only in its second season, and was the most streamed NFL game in history. We are going off a cliff. Like, nobody is watching this game.
15.26,000.
Yeah, like this, like if it's streamed on Prime Video, it might be like on somebody's phone at like Buffalo Wild Wings when they're hanging out with their friends on Thursday. Like, go associate with people. It's holiday season. You know, go have a white elephant thing or something like that.
Yeah.
Go look at the lights.
Yeah, I will say, it was very funny. Deontay Johnson scoring a touchdown and doing his touchdown dance down 24-0.
No, it was 24-9 after the 6 points of the touchdown. To be very clear, but like with 4.5 minutes left, it's like, dude, what are you doing?
It's the funniest thing ever. And like, I respect it. Stunt man.
It'd be one thing. It'd be one thing if you're doing that in general, but if you're doing it against like, I don't know, like the Niners, right? Like, okay, like, well, you know, everybody kind of expected this, but like you're doing it against the Cardinals. You know what I mean? Like, what's going on here? Like, it is a huge disconnect from reality. We have two games left. I guess let's go to Nashville, where Mark.
Well, we still have one fast forward, right? Rachelle has her.
That's right. Okay, Rachelle, surprises if you want to fast forward at any point. But this game was great in a weird, beautiful, chaotic way. The Colts survived, I guess, if you want to put it that way. This was a weird line. The Colts were only 1-point favorites, and everybody thought that that was like kind of free money. But it looked tenuous for a little while, Mark. 31-20 at the final score, thanks to Gardner Minshew hitting Michael Pittman Jr. for the game-winning touchdown. And my biggest take from this is that the Colts' all-white uniforms look tremendous in daylight. Like, if they're playing at noon in sunny, you know, conditions, they look beautiful.
I mean, I think the all whites look great all the time. Like, even under the lights, I think they look great. Like, I'm a big fan of the all whites. I'm also a big fan of Gardner Minshew in the locker room, the like celebration dance, which was absolutely hilarious. Like, Gardner Minshew is one of my favorite characters in all of the NFL. Like, get it back to, you know, when I talked to him at his Senior Bowl. He so totally leaned into the, like, I'm the next Baker Mayfield, nobody respects me line, which is just tremendous. He's just a character. The Colts are fun. Like, the Colts are legitimately fun. We talked about this a couple weeks ago. Like, they're basically running the offense they built for Anthony Richardson, but with Gardner Minshew, and it's working. And Shane Steichen has done such a tremendous job. Like, think about, you know, the Taylor situation, losing Anthony Richardson. Now this team's in the playoffs right now. They also have a pretty favorable schedule too. So it looks like they could get in, given what's coming ahead. Tremendous from them. You know, Derrick Henry, he's, I believe, concussion protocol right now, so we'll wait to see on him. Levis had some throws. Levis had a great tackle strip fumble after throwing a pick, which is just tremendous too. This was a fun game. This was the game that for me, like, I got the two TV set up, and I had in the opening window Denver Houston on the main TV, and then a four box with this game in the bottom quarter. This game immediately got promoted to, I'm just putting it on the second TV. Like, it got the promotion in the middle of that that early afternoon window, which is a statement.
I think the biggest thing watching that Shane Steichen offense, like you said, it is the same offense they built for Anthony Richardson, just with less like verticality and not big boom plays, but you're still getting that in spurts. You know, Michael Pittman had 116 yards on 16 targets, 11 catches. Alec Pierce adding 100 more yards. You're starting to get those guys more involved. And I just love how Shane Steichen is putting these guys in the best situations for them. You know, Michael Pittman is much more of a in-between guy. He is the kind of the tough physical guy over the middle. He's going to operate in the kind of 8 to 10 area range. Alec Pierce is more of the burner downfield. He is the jump ball specialist, and they use them in those ways. It's not like he's trying to fit square pegs and round holes. It makes sense, and there is proof that everything makes sense. And now you're starting to get the question. I was posed this question in a group chat that I'm in. If the Colts make the playoffs and you're able to get Anthony Richardson back healthy, is this like, would the Colts do it? I don't think so.
Yeah.
Because throwing a rookie back out there in the middle of the playoffs
would not be the smartest decision, especially one coming off a rotator cuff injury. But this team is fun to watch. And I think that's a really big testament to Shane Steichen and what he has built on this offense. And the defense is playing really well too. Like they have guys on that defense who can flip a game.
The Colts were in the pits of hell. And that's why Shane Steichen is my coach of the year. Like, and he did not, I'm not making it seem like D'Amico Ryans' job was easy, but he did not have all of the draft capital, the recent draft capital kind of hanging out. Like, I mean, the Colts have been stuck. And like Shane Steichen has proven to me, again, I don't want to dump on Frank Reich after last week, but like how horrible of a coach Frank Reich is. Like, I mean, not having your starting quarterback is kind of like a hallmark quality of the Colts at this point in time. But like, and it certainly helps that he has a quarterback who he's familiar with in Gardner Minshew, obviously. But like, he's making it work without Anthony Richardson, without Jonathan Taylor. They obviously moved on from Shaq Leonard recently. Like, they are grimy in a really fun and respectable way. They're totally a playoff team for me. This is the first time the Colts have been fun in a long time. Like, I can't recall, and maybe some of those Andrew Luck teams, whatever.
Andrew Luck years, yeah. I'd say, yeah.
But like,
even before that, like I couldn't like the Peyton Manning Colts just because of the whole New England, sure, Indianapolis thing. But the Jim Harbaugh Colts, like, I like that team. The team that lost on that Hail Mary in the playoffs that I still think was caught. JP, I think you weren't born yet at this point.
I heard Harbaugh Colts, and I was like, huh?
Yeah.
They used to wear. Yeah,
he was their quarterback for a while.
They used to have blue face masks. It was really cool.
Yeah. It was all white with blue face masks.
That's cool. Why don't we do that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Bring it back. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, we would love to see that. This was great. It was a really fun game. I don't have like a negative thought on Tennessee, but they're just wandering in the distance. You know what I mean? Like, I don't, you know, I threw this out, Mark, on the Friday show recently. Obviously, we don't know what's going to happen in New England, but let's fast forward ourselves and say that there is a mutual parting of ways with Bill Belichick. He goes, who knows where. Who's to say Mike Vrabel isn't traded for? Like, is that, like, does that help? Like, I feel like that's, I'm just throwing that out for conversation's sake. Like, Mike Vrabel's too talented of a coach to be with this Titans team at this point in time.
To go to New England, though?
Well, I mean, if you need to restart the Patriot way, like, who's the, like, perfect candidate for that? Ben Johnson or Mike Vrabel?
No, I mean, I think Mike, it would be nice to see Mike Vrabel come home. But I mean, I think we're also learning that maybe 70, 80% of the Patriot way was having Tom Brady as your quarterback. Like, I think the mythology of the Patriot way has kind of taken a hit. So I don't know if that's the direction they want to go to sort of recreate the Patriot way magic. Maybe just get, you know, Ben Johnson to work with Drake May or Caleb Williams or Jaden Daniels or Joe Alt.
I don't know what happens with the Titans this offseason. It's going to be a really interesting offseason for them. Rand Carthen, the new GM, did not pick Mike Vrabel as his head coach. He was kind of like, he was there, and then Rand Carthen was hired. So maybe they go in a different direction. Maybe Mike Vrabel's just like, yeah, man, I've had enough. I think it's time for a new challenge. But, you know, there is always the I hate to continue to bring it up, because Ohio State fans will get mad at me.
It's
right there.
But like, to that point, I mean.
Looks like Cam Ward's going to Ohio State.
Even, again, factor.
That was just sort of like touched about. Ryan Clark just sort of tweeted that out like in the past half hour or so.
Factoring in the Ohio State potential as it lies right now, it just doesn't feel like the Titans timeline fits Mike Vrabel's. You know, like he's ready to be with somebody who's like ready to contend right now. He's still a young head coach, but a successful one. Again, I'm not saying he can't orchestrate or oversee a rebuild, but like, do we want to see that? You know what I mean? Like, I want to see Mike Vrabel involved in legitimate games.
Los Angeles Chargers head coach Mike Vrabel.
I'm fine with that. Like, I mean, just get him out of Tennessee. It's really how I feel at this point in time. You know, that's really what I want more than anything.
Oh, the takes when they go like 9-8 next year with Mike Vrabel as the head coach, and it's, you've never given Justin Herbert an offensive minded head coach. Ooh. Oh, that'd be fantastic.
And give Kellen Moore head coaching job in Tennessee, and he's
just trade the two.
You know, Kellen Moore has been linked to the Panthers head coaching job, which would be incredibly funny.
He interviewed for it. I believe he interviewed for it when it went to Matt Rhule. And I believe John Fossil interviewed for it as well. I can't remember, but I think he did as well. So you never know. All right, last game. Rachel, you do have your fast forward if you want to use it. The Miami Dolphins boat race. All right. I guess should Tyreek Hill win MVP?
Yes. Mark. Tyreek Hill's the MVP, especially if he breaks the receiving record.
He's absolutely on pace to do that too. Like, he's got what, 5 games left and just like 600 yards or so to get there.
At one point in this game, he had 3 catches and 2 of them were for 60-yard touchdowns.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
that's Randy just Moss,
Thanksgiving vibes.
Yeah.
Sam Howell stinks. Like, I'm out. You know what I mean? I know we had a moment where we were all kind of in. I'm out.
Gen Z Jameis Winston. Sometimes you're up, sometimes you're down. Sometimes you get good Jameis, sometimes you get bad Jameis. I think
also
the biggest thing for the Commanders is if you really want to rock with Sam Howell next year, you better fix the offensive line, because that's Sam Howell.
That's the problem.
I've said this.
He, like Baker Mayfield, has too much dip on his chip and isn't necessarily the same caliber athlete as like Josh Allen to have too much dip on the chip. So you need to surround him with a better offensive line. But that's only if you think Sam is the guy.
Right. This loss cemented that Ron Rivera will finish below 500 in all 4 of his seasons so far with the Washington franchise. And a point we've been talking about on the NFC's mixtape is like, why not fire him and give Eric Bieniemy, you know, a shot at this. Yeah. What are you doing riding this out? Like, this is accomplishing nothing.
I kind of think that was a part of the contract that got him away from Kansas City. Like, that's just a tinfoil hat thing for me. Like, I think
what's your tinfoil hat theory specifically?
Specifically, it's they hired Eric Bieniemy to be basically the coach in waiting after this year. Like,
then why not let him do it now? Like, why not? So, like, why not give him a shot with Sam Howell now, so you know if he is the guy or not? You know what I mean? Like, that's so silly. I mean,
to be as bad as possible. Like, just be as bad as physically possible. Because if Eric Bieniemy comes in and wins games, you're playing yourself out of a premium draft pick.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I guess. Rachel, if you could please join us. And remember that I said that you were lovely and that I said nice things about the Baltimore Ravens. And if you could please offer your takes on week 13, your takes on what we had to say, and of course, crown this week's MFW MVP.
Yes. Starting with my takes. Scary Terry didn't have a catch. Yes.
He got some cardio, though.
Killed my fantasy team.
But that's embarrassing. So just bad vibes for the Commanders right now. Also, their star players like Daron Payne, Jonathan Allen, not being productive. Hate to see it for them. You guys already touched on Kyren Williams. Big day for him. Also, Chuba Hubbard. He had a really productive day. 25 carries, 104 yards, and 2 touchdowns. I love that Mark mentioned Gardner Minshew's locker room celebration. I was going to mention that as well. I thought it was hilarious.
That was tremendous.
It was definitely up there. Wasn't there another celebration we talked about? It was like the owner celebrating. It might have been the coach.
Oh, was it the Dolphins owner doing the walk?
It might have been somebody in the locker room a few weeks ago. We talked about that.
Jim Irsay.
Oh, Jim Irsay. Yeah.
He was about to fall out.
Yes. So that was hilarious. But you guys, points for today. RJ, I really liked your point about Cooper Kupp or Mike Evans ending up on the Chiefs roster next year. So something to just keep your eyes out on. Mark, I really liked your point about the Lions defense at this point being under the boiler. Very concerning. And JP, I liked your point about how the Saints just continue to repeat misses. And at this point, they just can't afford it. So, yeah. Today, I'm going to give it to RJ. I think you did a really good job.
Congrats to me. I earned it. That's really how I feel about this.
Yeah.
I'm going to reward myself with a chicken salad sandwich for lunch. I'm very excited about this. It's not your gross pimento abomination, Mark.
They took that off the menu.
I wonder why.
Lasted a couple of months.
Yeah, that's disgusting. But if it's all right, I'd like to break off 49% of my award, keep the majority, obviously, and give it to Florida State. JP, I know you wrote about this. They were robbed. They deserved a spot in the playoff. So I know it's not really a legitimate consolation prize, but I just wanted to give some love to the Seminoles.
They're going to declare themselves national champions when they finish undefeated, right?
If they win, right? It's a big if because they got sent to Georgia Death Machine. But if they win, they should absolutely claim a national title.
Well,
100%.
Do I get props, JP, for giving them some of my award?
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much.
We will be at the parade. We'll give you a low at grade.
Yeah, thank you very much. That's really all I want. Rachel, you can sit shotgun because you gave me
a double. Okay, I like it.
So everyone wins. Mark, you won't have to watch a Patriots game. So everyone wins. All right. Let's get out of here. As we leave, Mark, I would like you to tell us, since we talked about the pimento cheese thing, something else you find to be delicious that the consensus finds to be disgusting.
Doritos and salsa.
Holy crap. That it was a good answer. That sounds gross.
No, it's still a favorite of mine. Dating back to my high school.
Like normal Doritos or like Cool Ranch?
Yeah, normal Doritos and salsa.
Okay.
Alrighty. Yeah, Mark, that's gross.
Hey, you asked.
Support for this podcast came from SAS. Data is everything. And now everything is data, which means more to process, more to analyze. And now more than ever, speed to answers matters. So how do you produce those answers as fast as the world produces data? With SAS Viya, the quickest way from a billion points of data to a point of view. It's a more productive data and AI platform that helps you get more done. Learn more today at sas.com/VIYA.